I'm Bill Littlefield. It's Final Four weekend, and this year's spectacle is being held in Arizona, more specifically at the University of Phoenix Stadium, typically the home of the NFL's Arizona Cardinals. And one of this week's guests has some feelings about that venue. The guests are Wall Street Journal's Jason Gay and Washington Post's Cindy Boren. Welcome back to both of you.
Hi, thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
Jason, I understand that you are not entirely delighted by the venue that I previously mentioned.
No, I'm out of my mind, Bill. I'm just... I'm so sick and tired of this ritual. Now, this is almost 40 years that the NCAA has been hosting its Final Four in this gargantuan stadium. It's been in every dome imaginable. Domes that don't even exist. King Dome, Metrodome. We have it in the University of Phoenix. Some 80,000 people, roughly, will be showing up to watch the Final Four, Bill. And you know what about 60,000 of them will be doing? Watching it on a jumbotron because they can barely see the court. I don't mean to surprise you and shock you guys here, but it's kind of dictated by money.
That is shocking. Absolutely shocking.
It turns out that college sports are interested in making money. I researched this. And the reason they make this move, of course, is because they can sell a lot more tickets. At a certain point, you start to diminish the experience. And basketball, you know, I have to say a reader wrote this to me, and I'm going to steal it and take credit for it. But basketball is one of those things, almost like, you know, seeing a concert. The smaller the room, the better and more memorable the experience.
I'm going to have to argue with Mr. Cranky Pants. that's what we're going to call you now. No, I take your point about basketball. I think it is one of those things that is best enjoyed in a small, dank, dingy dungeon of a gym, you know. The problem is the ship has left the harbor. Unless you can somehow turn back the clock or shrink down the NCAA, but I'm not seeing anything in sports that's shrinking right now.
Well, weirdly enough, the NBA did. The NBA experimented with giant arenas for its All-Star game, and they decided that they didn't like it. And, you know, this year, weirdly enough, they had their All-Star game in New Orleans right next to the Superdome. I mean, they could have filled the Superdome. You don't think 70,000 people want to go see the NBA All-Star game, but they prefer
the smaller
place.
No, I don't. I really don't. I mean,
really?
Did you see the NBA All-Star game? How many points were scored in the NBA All-Star game?
I think the final score was 700-699.
We did do a story years ago about the game that was held in the Astrodome, the NCAA Final Four held in the Astrodome, and the people who were sitting on the floor needed periscopes to see the game, and the people who were sitting in the cheap seats needed telescopes to see the game. So I can see your point. On the other hand, why does it matter for money? Because it's all about TV rights, isn't it? Isn't that where all the money comes from, advertising on TV for the NCAA Final Four?
Well, you're exactly right, Bill. I mean, the driver of the economics of all this is television. It's a multi-billion dollar deal for the rights to the Final Four and to March Madness as an entity. It's hard to walk it back. I agree with Cindy entirely that, you know, the horse is out of the barn and that it's very hard to dial these things back. But I would say that, weirdly enough, there's a school of thought out there that thinks that the way to go with stadium construction now is smaller, smaller, smaller. The San Diego Chargers. Now, I'm not comparing the appeal of the San Diego Chargers
that's a good thing.
To a Final Four. But they're going to be playing in the Home Depot Center in L.A. next season. It's going to be 30,000-some-odd seats. I know that means much more expensive tickets, but hey, I can't afford those tickets as it is right now.
All right, it's my turn, and money is once again going to be in the discussion. John Calipari is paid $7.5 million a year to coach the men's basketball team at the University of Kentucky, and he, like 38 other basketball or football coaches, is the most lavishly compensated person in his state working for a public entity. This is not a new circumstance, of course, but the Final Four gives me a good occasion to bring it up again. And here's my question. Is this phenomenon merely the rational end of the working of market forces? That is, by definition, is Coach Calipari paid precisely what he's worth? Or is it flat out nuts to pay somebody $7.4 million to coach a basketball team?
Well, I think it's both, actually. I think he's worth, nobody's worth that kind of money, but he's worth a lot of money. He's a very good coach. We have a story on the Post website right now, but the University of Central Florida, which is building an athletic facility, I think it's a $25 million bunch of upgrades. It's going to be like a tropical playground. They're putting in a lazy river with a miniature golf course.
For that money, they should get an energetic river.
Phil, this is an arms race now.
Interestingly, a couple of weeks ago, I had the opportunity to go down to the University of Florida, where I went to a conference of sports economists called the NCAA Cartel. And this very issue came up. And what was really interesting to hear from these economists was that they don't feel like it's market forces that are driving these crazy salaries. $7.5 million for Calipari. I think Jim Harbaugh is up to $9 million at the University of Michigan. What it actually indicates, what these economists feel it indicates, is that there's just such a surplus of money that's created by these top programs that they have to spend it somewhere. They're spending it on things like $7.5 million coaches and lazy rivers. What are they not spending it on? They're not spending it on the athletes, the people who are actually out there competing day in, day out, and making the compelling theater that is college sports.
Cindy, you're up.
I'm going to talk about Draymond Green. He did a nice thing the other night. He talked about the Oakland Raiders who are moving to Las Vegas. You might have heard something about that. And he sympathized with the poor, poor Raider fans who are being deserted. Not only deserted, but they are now expected for the next 3 years until their stadium in Vegas is ready to turn up and cheer, cheer, cheer for the Raiders in Oakland. And, you know, that's ugly. It's awkward. And give Draymond Green credit for feeling that pain. You know, he said, there's no way I'd attend a game for the next 3 years. It's ridiculous. No way I'd pay. Unfortunately, there's one little thing that Draymond Green was forgetting. He plays for the Golden State Warriors, who play in Oakland and are, yes, leaving in another few years for San Francisco.
Yeah, but
I got it
just across the bay. It's not very far. It's not like going to Las Vegas.
No, and, you know, in fairness to him, at least you will be able to see Oakland from their new arena. Unlike, you know, Vegas, you're going to need a telescope to see Oakland.
Cindy, I don't want to brag here, but you got to speak to Draymond Green. This week I spoke to Wayne Newton, and Wayne Newton thinks the Las Vegas Raiders are a great idea. I'm just telling
really?
You right now that
really?
Mr. Las Vegas has no problem whatsoever with the Oakland Raiders making their way to the desert. But this whole construct that you talk about and that Draymond talked about, this idea of the zombie seasons that the Raiders are going to be playing by the bay for the next couple of years, it is a really bizarre situation. What do you do if you are a fan who has, you know, lived and died with this team for a number of years? Let's not forget these guys escaped to L.A. for 13 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not
right.
like there's without precedent here. But it is a weird thing, right? Should they be going out and maybe like setting up something temporary in Las Vegas for a couple seasons before they move into their giant $2 billion fancy pants stadium? I don't know. It's you have to feel for this very tormented fan base. And the weirdest part of all, this is a really good team. Usually when these teams go on the road, they're bad and no one wants them. And it's kind of like good riddance. You made me sad anyway. The Raiders were a fabulous AFC team last year. They could be a Super Bowl contender this season. It's a very bizarre circumstance.
Who knew Wayne Newton was still alive?
I wasn't going to say that.
I'm thrilled.
Just 75.
That.
Come on, guys. Doing a show a night at the Bally's.
Anyway, my thoughts regarding the Raiders move, I'm fine. They can move wherever they want. But it's the speculation about the next move that has me worried, because there is a lot of talk about the NFL putting a team in London, and that bothers me a lot. First of all, because I really like London, and secondly, because philosophically, should we really be inflicting football on other countries? I don't think we should.
What, they have soccer. They don't need football.
Exactly. They have no, they have football. They don't need football.
No, that's true. They don't need our football. I know lots of people in England who actually love the NFL. If they want a team over there, why not give them, you know, say goodbye to Jacksonville, Jaguars, you're heading to London.
Oh,
what I think it's unfortunate that we sort of give them our refuse, you know?
Right, yeah.
But
or scraps.
I would just be a little broader in my definition of refuse, that's all. My guests for this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know have been the Washington Post's Cindy Bourne and the Wall Street Journal's Jason Gay. Thank you, both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bill.